Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and around the world at kfai.org, where community grows.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mini Culture Presents. I'm your curator, Michael Whetstone, and today we've got a music-rich documentary about the brilliant debut album from the Patti Smith Group, Horses, celebrating its 50th anniversary in 2025. Horses was released or unleashed on November 10th, 1975. It was a mix of poetry and wild rock and roll that is as powerful and influential today as it was the day it hit the record shops. The documentary is hosted by Rita Houston of New York public radio station WFUV. We'll also hear from Patti Smith herself, guitarist Lenny Kaye, who played on the album, and the Velvet Underground's John Cale, who produced the record, as well as journalist Anthony DeCurtis of Rolling Stone. In addition to tracks from the original album, the special also features live versions of songs recorded in 2005, featuring televisions of Tom Verlaine and Flea of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. The documentary was produced in 2006 for the album's 30th anniversary, and now another 20 years later and turning 50, the record remains certifiably fresh and vibrant today. If you're already a fan, or if you're curious as to what all the fuss is about, stick around with me now for this hour-long documentary from Joyride Productions.
We were declaring our existence, and we were there for who needed us. I don't like to be labeled, and I didn't like to be labeled then. It's clearly written on the liner notes of the record. I was, you know, a worker carrying a torch for art, and I still feel that way.
Patti Smith wasn't just carrying a torch for art back in 1975. It was more like a flamethrower. She exploded instantly with her debut album, Horses, a mix of poetry and wild rock and roll. The sound of Horses still kicks you in the gut. In the next hour, we'll talk to Patti Smith, guitarist Lenny Kaye, and producer John Cale about how it was made and why it's still celebrated. I'm Rita Houston, and welcome to Patti Smith Horses.
Well, in 1975, there was a sense of kind of openness, I guess, on the scene, and sense that something needed to inject some new energy into, you know, into popular music.
Contributing editor to Rolling Stone magazine, Anthony DeCurtis.
The 60s were receding, and nothing really had risen up to take its place. You know, things were seeming pretty corporate, pretty dull. Punk hadn't happened yet. And suddenly Horses really kind of injected both a passion and a sense of a future for what music could be. It was tremendously exciting because here was somebody who both understood what the kind of great dream of rock and roll was, and she was setting out to make it real. And, you know, I think a lot of people just responded to that passion and idealism in the music.
Patti Smith knew exactly what she wanted from her debut record.
The motivation of Horses was really clear. It was to, first of all, to try to remind us all in the form of a record the possibilities inherent in rock and roll at a time where I felt people were deviating from rock and roll's greatest course, which is to give the people a grassroots cultural voice that includes political ideas, poetry, sexual energy, revolutionary ideas, and not just something that's like for money, fame, and riches, and broads, and drugs, and glamour. You know, I really felt like the media and corporations were sort of deviating its course, and people were participating in that, musicians participating in that, and I felt like we had to be very vigilant, or we were going to lose rock and roll as our cultural voice.
Let's hear Patti Smith and her band play their rock and roll. Here's Gloria.
Jesus died for somebody's sins, but not mine. Millionaire, pot of thieves, wild cord on my sleeve. Thick heart of stone, my sins my own, they belong to me, me. People say beware, but I don't care. The words are just rules and regulations to me, me.
We took this.
Patti Smith and the band with Gloria from the album Horses. Even if you're not a rock and roll fan, you probably recognize the last part of that song. It's the classic Gloria, done by everyone from the Yardbirds to the Doors to Van Morrison. Does it seem odd that an iconoclast like Patti Smith would play a rock staple? Rolling Stone magazine's contributing editor, Anthony DeCurtis.
People see punk as a break, and in a lot of ways it was, but really, the punk of, as Patti Smith defined it, was really a kind of neoclassicism. You know, here's somebody whose references are, you know, Van Morrison and Mick Jagger and Jim Morrison and The Who. You know, those kinds of things are what comes naturally to her. She just wanted in. You know, in a sense, I mean, it was rebellious in gender terms, but it wasn't rebellious necessarily in strictly musical terms. You know, I mean, she was breaking certain boundaries, but she, I think she felt she was extending a tradition of her idols. You know, this was the music of somebody who was commenting on the music that she loved.
Guitarist Lenny Kaye has played with Patti since 1971.
We understood where we came from. We understood what listening to Bob Dylan and the Rolling Stones and seeing the pyrotechnics of Jimi Hendrix and The Who helped us understand certain impulses within us. But on the other hand, we didn't want to be trapped by history. We didn't want to imitate. We really didn't quite know what we were about, but we knew that we had very high standards that had been set for us by our forebears, and we wanted to at least honor them by being as good and as different as they were. You know, to me, all the people who say that Horses either changed their life or helped them form a band, the greatest compliment to me is the fact that none of these bands sound really at all like us. They took our spirit and our sense of inspiration and converted it to their own uses. And that, to me, is one of the things that we did. We tried to honor where we'd been, but we certainly didn't want to be trapped by it.
Patti Smith did the same for the musicians she admired.
Chris Kenner had two great songs, I Like It Like That and you know, Land of a Thousand Dances. And actually, I really wanted to do I Like It Like That. And we used to do it. In fact, I know that because if you listen to Land, some of I Like It Like That, some of it is riffing on I Like It Like That. I Like It Like That, I Like It Like That, Do You Know How to Pony It?
Go!
Heart of Land, a giant piece by Patti Smith from the album Horses. Patti drops references to songs that she loved, but the focus is always on the poetry she writes.
My other motivation was I was also very interested in poetry and performing poetry, but I felt that, you know, except for a handful of, you know, great poets, we had a handful, that most poets were really boring, that poetry was very dead, and I was trying to fuse the energy of rock and roll within a poetic landscape.
Guitarist Lenny Kaye figures out how to put them to music.
She puts words together in a way that are very clear. She's not an obscurist poet, you know. You don't have to read along, you know, a syllabus with her to be able to understand what she's saying. She's a poet of the people, and yet lend themselves to song from the first moment. I found that the lilt and melody within her phrasing lent itself toward the placement of guitar chords underneath it, that these were songs in their becoming.
Patti's performances of her poetry makes a big difference. Rolling Stone's Anthony DeCurtis.
You know, at times she's almost conversational. She's just speaking to you almost the way a hipster might talk. You know, she kind of affects that style. But on the other hand, you know, you also just kind of get this wild sort of stream of consciousness. It's very much out of Ginsberg, you know. She saw words as something that, you know, don't just express meaning, but express emotion, and emotion by way of sound. So there's almost a kind of glossolalia, you know, that element of getting taken over by the spirit and speaking in ways that don't make literal sense, but just make sense only as sound and only as emotion. You know, there's a, you know, that idea of stop making sense, I think, is very important to her. That kind of, you know, irrationality as a way to a higher truth, I think, is very deep in an album like Horses.
The producer of Horses was John Cale, a founder of the Velvet Underground and a longtime solo artist.
She throws words at you like boulders, you know, you'll trip over them, and it's very exciting. When she's in full flow, I mean, it reminds me of a lot of some of the Welsh preachers that I knew when I was a kid. The way the poetry would build and all of that, it's very much like, not soul singing, it's very much like preaching, southern gospel preaching. It starts at one level and then it becomes song. You know, be really innovating and like would grab you and take you somewhere. And Patti can do that.
White lids, white opal, seeing everything just a little bit too clearly. And looked around and there was no black ship in sight. No black funeral cars, nothing except for him. Raven fell on his knees, looked up and cried out. Ah!
Patti Smith stops making sense in Birdland, an epic performance from the album Horses. I'm Rita Houston, and you're listening to Patti Smith Horses. Contributing editor for Rolling Stone, Anthony DeCurtis.
On Horses, you know, Patti Smith was also working with John Cale. I mean, this is somebody with a very sophisticated avant-garde background. You know, somebody who, I mean, along with being, you know, one of the founding members of the Velvet Underground, you know, has a kind of, you know, classical and avant-garde training in music, you know, that allows him to hear whatever the possibilities are, you know. So he's somebody that, you know, as a producer and collaborator in the studio, you know, isn't going to be a restraining force at all, you know, as somebody who's going to, you know, let you go and maybe push you a little bit out to whatever edge you want to explore. So that was also another element.
Guitarist Lenny Kaye.
We asked John Cale to be our producer because we love the Velvet Underground and we felt that his artistic sensibilities would match ours. And John did, in a very strange way, I think. He was very much into orchestration. At that point, he wanted to layer tracks. He liked the Beach Boys. We wanted to record essentially live with very few overdubs. And in the course of this creative tension and dialogue, what John wanted us to do was to prove ourselves. You want to record live? Give me something that's truly live, not just a rendition of a song done of the moment.
It wasn't easy for the outsider, John Cale, to walk in and produce these musicians.
They were all rock and roll animals. It was kind of a traveling family. It was very close-knit, very tight core of people. It was Patti, her manager, Jane Friedman, and the band. Lenny was the leader of the band. And Lenny was there, you know, with the same sort of understanding of where they were, you know, full understanding of what they had to do and how they had to go about doing it.
Guitarist Lenny Kaye.
He made us define ourselves in terms of who we wanted to be at that moment in time, and that to me is the key thing any producer does.
John Cale.
And there's a shock, you know. The first time you go in the studio, there's a shock. You're hearing things back in a very different way from what you remember them. You can get shaky from that.
Making a record's like a psychodrama sometimes. You know, you're looking in the mirror for the first time and see who you really are, your limitations, your aspirations, and to actually cut it into a concrete form that is a record, a snapshot of its moment, can sometimes be very draining or discouraging or inspirational or all the above. It's a great psychic struggle making a record, and often you're not in control of the elements as much as one would like to think. It is a moment in time. And to me, especially for the Horses songs, that is a moment in time. It's where we were then.
Let's hear one of the results. Redondo Beach.
Late afternoon, dreamy hotel. You just had to quarrel, sent you away. Looking for you, how you gone down? Tell you on the phone, another dimension, where you never returned. Oh, you know what I mean. I went looking for you, how you gone down? Down by the ocean. Gone, gone. Down by the ocean, it was so dismal. Women all
Patti Smith and her band with Redondo Beach from their 1975 debut album, Horses. In a minute, Patti tells us about her childhood, her early days in New York, and where her poetry comes from. I'm Rita Houston. Stay with us for more of Patti Smith, Horses.
I just don't know what to do.
I never stopped writing since I was like 8. I mean, I keep a diary or I'll write dreams down or write a few sentences, but I always write something down almost every day, even if it's just a sentence. You know, I wasn't really a gifted writer as a kid. I had a really good imagination. I wasn't really skilled technically, and I didn't really, I don't think, showed any real promise as a writer, but I had endless ideas, endless stories. And I was very creative. I wasn't a skilled child. I wasn't afraid of work. You know, I could work on something endlessly to try to make it better. Or I always thought I just wanted to keep working until I did something great. And I'm still working. You know, I don't feel like I've done what I haven't hit my stride yet, so I'm still I've written things that I'm really proud of and that I like, but I'm still working.
One of her poems came from watching a barn that had set on fire. She was taking care of her baby sister Kimberly that night.
Everything seemed cataclysmic to me, you know, because I was like 11 or 12, and it was really windy and the flames were shooting everywhere and one of the trees caught fire. And I wrote the song when I was older, of course, but it was somewhat about myself and the things that I'd like to do in life. And, you know, where it says I feel like some misplaced Joan of Arc, you know, I have like these dreams of greatness or something, and not really great at all, just a, you know, a kid taking care of her sister. And but I think, you know, I guess I reconcile that in the end of the song, you know, basically everything can, you know, fall apart as long as we're all okay. You know, I still feel like that, you know. It's like whatever happens, as long as my kids are okay and, you know, I can live with whatever happens, you know, as long as the kids are all right.
The wall is high, the black barn, the baby in my arms in a swiping clues.
And you are tuned in to Mini Culture Presents on Fresh Air Community Radio, KFEI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Radio without boundaries. Support for this program comes from KFEI listener members and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. In honor of the 50th anniversary of the album Horses by Patti Smith, released on November 10th, 1975, we are listening to this music-heavy documentary about one of rock's great landmark albums, a record many believe genuinely changed popular music and is still making waves. This documentary was produced by Joyride Media back in 2006. Mini Culture Presents and our appreciation of the album Horses will return with more right after these messages.
Support for KFAI comes from the Landmark Center, presenting the 14th season of Landmark Live in the F.K. Weyerhaeuser Auditorium. Friday, November 14th, Landmark Live presents Kiss the Tiger. Twin Cities music scene mainstays Kiss the Tiger are back with their new album, Infinite Love. It's an album that highlights their growth as a band, explores new musical avenues, and showcases their flair for the theatrical. More information about Kiss the Tiger and all of the 2025 Landmark Live concerts can be found at landmarkcenter.org.
Welcome to the 21st century. Ugh. We were promised a utopian world with jetpacks, flying cars, and time machines. What we got is...
Please listen closely as our menu options have changed.
And...
unexpected item in banking area.
Thankfully, KFAI has changed and hasn't. KFAI still brings you the coolest mix of music from around the world that you won't hear anywhere else. And you can listen, live stream, or download the programs you want on anything from your radio to your smartphone. Whether you're on the go or just lying on the couch.
Insufficient movement detected. Have you taken a bad fall? Notifying emergency services.
KFAI, non-commercial community-powered 21st century radio.
Welcome back to Patti Smith Horses. I'm Rita Houston. Patti's family kept her young brain working and dreaming.
My father used to say he was an agnostic, but he was a man who really was constantly searching for the meaning of life, the truth in the scriptures, you know, what God really was. I mean, that was part of his daily preoccupation, that and will the Phillies ever win the World Series? So I grew up in a very interesting atmosphere of, you know, of a love of sports and a passion for, you know, searching for the meaning of the universe, which was really one of my dad's favorite discussions.
She wrote a song called Free Money with her mom in mind.
It does resonate my mom in that my mom, our whole life, used to talk about when our ship comes in, because we had a lot of rough financial times when I was a kid. My mom would always say, you know, our ship will be coming in and I'm going to buy a house in New England by the sea and you'll all have your own room and, you know, and we're going to eat steak and she would say this all the time. And then she got into this thing in later years, well, when I win the lottery, you know, I'm going to buy us a house by the sea and you'll all have your own room and your friends can have a room. And one day I said to her, Mommy, do you ever buy lottery tickets? And she said, well, no. And I thought, well, okay. And I thought, well, she's going to have to win some cosmic lottery. But in any event, my mom was a great dreamer. And she was always positive. I mean, she was really such a great example, because in troubled times, she was so imaginative. She made everything exciting. Like when we had literally no food but a bag of potatoes, this is what she would do. She would say, you know what we're going to do tonight? I'm going to get the biggest pot in the house and fill it with hot oil, and we're just going to eat the biggest mountain of French fries you ever saw. And we would get so excited, and she would just make a mountain of French fries and salt it up, and they were really good because my mom made really good French fries. And so it wasn't like wasn't bad. You know, it wasn't like, oh, all we got to eat is potatoes. It was like, wow, we're having a mountain of French fries.
Patti Smith's mom gave the emotional weight to the song Free Money, but the inspiration to write it came from a very different place. Patti Smith.
Free Money had a very strange inception. I was like walking around the East Village, like 3 a.m, and this husky dog, you know, one of those huskies with those like white eyes, came toward me with no owner or anything around. And he just stood in front of me. And I stood looking at this dog for like 10 minutes, and this music came in my head. It came out of his eyes. So the great thing about Lenny Kaye is that you can go to Lenny Kaye and say, Lenny, which I did, I found that I saw this dog on the street, and this music came out of his eyes. And he went, oh, can you remember it? I said, sorta. And I, you know, tried to hum it for him, and he picked it out on guitar and worked on it, and it became the music that became Free Money.
Guitarist Lenny Kaye.
I think when you listen to a song like, you know, it's the story Patty tells of how Free Money came to begin, the one thing you don't do is think about it. You just see what it sets off inside of you, what the melody might be. Certainly in the lifeline of this band, there's so many amazing things that have happened that to dwell on the amazing thing and not dwell on what has come out of the amazing thing will point you in the wrong direction. You have to stay within the moment. So if Patty's telling me a story of how, you know, she walks into a market and a dog beams Free Money in it, well, I just have to, you know, go woof woof myself and access the canine part of my personality and see what that might mean to a dog, you know, like, you know, free treats, or I'm going to get petted on the head, or I'm going to sing a song.
Every night before I go to sleep, find a ticket, win a lottery, scoop the pearls up from the sea, cash them in and buy you all the things you need. Every night before I rest my head, see those dollar bills go swirling at my bed. I know they're stolen, but I don't be bad. I take that money, buy you things you never had. Oh, baby,
we'll be right back.
Free Money from the album Horses, played by Patti Smith and her band. Horses was Patti's 1975 debut album, but she'd already been in New York's cultural world for 7 years.
When I arrived, I was 20 years old. I wasn't part of any scene. I got a job. I worked and studied. You know, I wasn't, you know, I had a boyfriend, Robert Mapplethorpe, and he was a student, and we didn't have any money, and we didn't have time to be part of any scene. And then some years later, I guess, we moved to the Chelsea Hotel in 69, and there was a scene there, but, you know, I never really thought about it in terms of a scene. It's where I lived. We lived at the Chelsea. I worked at, still working at the bookstore. And, but it was a great time to live at the Chelsea Hotel. We had the smallest room at the Chelsea Hotel. And, but you know, there was, at any given time, you know, there's Shirley Clark was doing her films. Diane Arbus might be coming in and out. William Burroughs was there every evening. In the El Quixote bar, Allen Ginsberg came in and out. And then a lot of like rock and roll people stayed there, you know. So, you know, I got to know like Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix stayed there, and Jefferson Airplane, Big Brother and the Holden Company. You know, there would be people were passing in and out of the Chelsea Hotel quite a bit. So, it was a very energetic atmosphere, because the Chelsea Hotel was still, it was expensive by apartment fees if you were gonna stay like at the East Village, but it was still cheap. I mean, our room was like $50 a week, and I made about $65 a week. So you could see what our economic situation was. So, but everybody was like that. You know, nobody had any money. It might have, to some people, seemed like it had a glamorous facade, but nobody ever had any money. Viva lived there. Everybody was always bumming money. And sometimes I used to think I was the only person that had a steady job that, you know, lived at the Chelsea for a while.
That work ethic applied to being a musician, too. She describes her music as a job, something that requires discipline and patience. To Patti Smith, art is a pursuit of truth that demands respect. She also saw what the musician's life can do to great artists.
Those people did a lot of drinking, a lot of substances, and a lot of them are dead. You know? And I saw that. So that was actually quite an example for me to see, you know, that, you know, the that self-destruction might seem sort of romantic, but, you know, it's only romantic if you, you know, don't mind having an early death. And I saw, you know, a lot of the people that I saw there died. I mean, Janis Joplin was 27 years old when she died. So was Jimmy, and so was Jim Morrison. That's really young. I mean, I was, to put it in my own perspective, when I recorded Horses, I think I was 27. And I did my first album at an age those people all died. So it's the amount of great works that could have been, come from these people, or it's just... well, it's tragic.
Trumpets, violins, I hear them in the distance. And my skin emits a ray, but I think it's sad. It's much too bad. With us today.
I had this dream. I came in on a clearing. There were natives in a circle, bending and gesturing. I saw a man stretched across a marble slab. It was Jim Morrison. He was alive with wings that merged with the white marble. Like Prometheus, he struggled, but freedom was beyond him. I stood over him, chanting, "Break it up, break 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 it up. Code etched like some new hieroglyphics. Break it up, Jim. Break it up, Jim. Break it up. Hours like orders, passing like water. Break it up, Jim. Break it up. Break it up, Jim. Break it up. Time moved as my mouth. The stone disintegrated and he moved away. I brushed the feathers from my hair. I adjusted my pillow and I returned to sleep. Car stopped in a clearing. Ribbon of life, it was nearing.
Smith and the band with Break It Up from a live performance in 2005 of the entire Horses album. Music writer Anthony DeCurtis.
Well, listening back to Horses now, it's amazing how fresh it still sounds. Although, you know, the times, it has been so influential a record that you're also hearing so much of R.E.M. and so much of U2 and, you know, so much of so many other bands. I mean, those are only two of the most famous ones. You know, this was a record that a lot of people listened to and a lot of people not so much took ideas from, but took inspiration from and, you know, followed through. And, you know, if you do interviews and you talk to artists, you know, Patti Smith, you know, for the generations that came after her, is an enormous, significant reference.
The album remained influential even when Patti Smith left the scene in 1980 to raise her family.
I didn't perform these songs for like 16 years. So going back to any song in 1995, when I did start performing again in 1996, was a difficult experience. Sometimes it was just painful, you know, because a lot of the songs were written for people who had died or, you know, that we had lost. And or written with Richard Soul, our piano player who, you know, was one of the founding members of our band. So there was a certain amount of sorrow attached to performing these songs. That was the first thing I had to get over. And I actually haven't totally gotten over that, you know, with some songs. Some songs I just can't do. They just make me too sad. But most of them I can do.
Guitarist Lenny Kaye has been with these songs right from the start.
To me, it's very exemplified by the relative layers of meaning in the opening words to Gloria, you know, where once it might have been seen as defiance, you know, Jesus died for somebody's sins, but not mine. To me, now it seems more an acceptance of personal responsibility and man and woman's social place within this world, and the need that we have to have compassion for our fellow human beings, and to have understanding of the global problems facing us, and the sense that we have to deal with it, because waiting for some divine force might not do the trick. And revisiting it now, 30 years later, getting to play Horses start to finish in London was a great pleasure, in just being able to measure how far we'd come in concept and grace and the ability to understand our music.
Once again, live from London, Patti Smith and the band close with their usual encore, The Who's My Generation.
Why don't you just fade away?
Generation by The Who, performed live in 2005 by Patti Smith and her band.
The main ingredient for artists is that they're not satisfied. I mean, if Picasso was satisfied, you know, during the Blue Period, he wouldn't have given us Cubism and everything else he gave us, or Guernica, or, you know, artists, you know, as soon as they finish a work, it no longer belongs to them. Artists are process-oriented. So you have to, it's like its own addiction, you know, you do a piece of work and you get to love it for a few minutes and then you're off struggling with the next piece of work.
Patti Smith Horses was produced by Joyride Media. Paul Chufo and Joshua Jackson are the producers. Our executive producer is John Vernile. The original and live versions of these songs can be found on the Sony BMG Legacy set, Patti Smith, Horses, Horses. Special thanks go to Adam Block, Jeff Jones, Eric Molk, Krista Jones, Steve Berkowitz, Lisa Buckler, Mark Feldman, Andy Kahn, Nadine Nassar, and Laura Bellis. I'm Rita Houston, and thanks for listening.
And thank you for listening and for tuning into Mini Culture Presents here on KFEI. Horses was released on November 10th, 1975. 50 years of influencing musicians and artists and punks and poets. Sadly, Rita Houston, longtime program director of public radio station WFUV, died on December 15th, 2020, after a long battle with cancer. Patti Smith is still touring. You can hear more great documentaries from Joyride Media at their website, joyridemedia.com. This has been Mini Culture Presents. I am your presenter, Micah Whetstone, and you are tuned into Fresh Air Community Radio, KFEI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Support for this program comes from KFEI listener members and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Stay tuned now to get upside down.
You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org. KFAI is non-commercial, community-powered radio. I'm Station Director Nora Doherty, and I am announcing a brief silence, 2 minutes to update some essential software related to our broadcast signal, and we will be back in 2 minutes after that. So a scheduled outage momentarily, and then we'll be back with Upside Down. See you in a few.